listening to The Afternoon Commute with John Adams of HoaxbustersCall.com and Aberrato of Fakeologist.com. You can find past shows at audiochat.fakeologist.com. You'll also find instructions on how to join in and add your voice to this very special community. Now, on with the call.
It's Friday, September 4th, 2015. This is the Fakeologist Conference Call with John Adams' Afternoon Commute. Hi, John.
Today it's the morning commute, Tim.
You're morning, I'm afternoon. I guess it just depends on what side of the pancake you're floating on.
That's apparently so, right?
Well, it is in my world. I'm starting to think that the sun might only be 33 miles up and 330 miles across, because it answers a lot of questions, like why it's so hot half the time.
Or why they use 33 so often?
Yeah, well, exactly. Yeah, where did they get that number? It's got to be, I can't remember what the official explanation is, but yeah, 33 is super special. So how's your week been?
It's been pretty good. Looking forward to our federally mandated 3-day weekend. So.
Yeah, we got one too. It's Labor Day all around, everywhere.
That's right. Yep. It is an interesting thing, that, but I'll take it for what it is.
Yeah, labor is almost turned into controlled opposition. I don't know if maybe it always was. Anytime you have an issue with the union, it usually just goes into this black hole of arbitration. It takes forever, and you never get even near what you wanted, but it takes care of a lot of, it's a safety valve, so I don't know if it's just naturally become controlled opposition or unions or had a purpose at one point, but they're not exactly defending the jobs, I guess, once they leave the country or the continent. There's not much they can do about it, but.
Yeah, I think they were always controlled opposition. What happened was, is when the Industrial Revolution, I was about to say the Industrial Illusion, which would be more fitting, but the Industrial Revolution happened, there were obviously people who really were angry about working conditions and that type of stuff, so they started the labor unions to be controlled opposition so that they wouldn't have the people, you know, leave en masse. And actually there's been proof over long periods of time that when they do have these strikes come about because for the same reason, you know, we have a lot of other things where they have strikes to make sure people don't strike for real.
Yeah, I know what you're saying. I was up north in a lumber town, in a pulp and paper town, that incidentally the pulp and paper mill just closed, so, well, sort of wiping out the town. But there was a plaque, an historical plaque, at a mile marker on the world's largest road, which is incidentally Highway 11 in Canada, Ontario. And it was about a group that was created a strike, and it became violent, apparently. And all the numbers I saw on the plaque were a cult, and I thought, is it possible that this so-called uprising, this mini-revolt, this strike gone bad, do you think that that might have been fake? And really, the purpose is just to create, like you said, a form of safety valve that, yeah, okay, people really do have issues at work, and they get mad, and then they start to percolate and revolt. So they created this fake event. Maybe that just releases all the pressure.
That's right. It's a steam valve, and that's mainly what the labor unions were for, because the industrialists, the big industrialists at the time, people back then, just like a select group of people today, they knew that the industrial capitalists were corrupt. So, they created the labor unions to quell the real opposition. And once that was done, and actually they did a lot of it through the Communist Party, because you'll see the labor labor movement is tied in with what's called the World Workers' Party, which was a communist front group. And so the Labour Party in England is basically directly Fabian socialist run, and always has been. So I'm sure the Labour Party in Canada too is as well.
Well, yeah, I think like all organizations, even if it starts off real, it can quickly be taken over, because there might have been one inspired individual that started a certain chapter, a certain local, just like a certain company. And then when that firecracker, that instigating person goes away or dies or moves on, just the people that like the control organization sort of set in, and they can use it for whatever they want. But does this have anything to do with explaining where Jimmy Hoffa is?
I'm going to guess Jim. I'm going to take a wild stab, no pun intended, that Jimmy Hoffa faked his death.
Yeah, that never comes up, but I think he's hanging with Elvis and the Kennedys. I sort of believe that he, yeah. Why would he disappear, though? Is it just to scare off future generations of labor union leaders, or would you think he was just tired of being in the spotlight, or... What could some of the more speculative reasons for him leaving be?
Well, he was very corrupt, obviously, and maybe his veneer was wearing thin, so they had to kill him off.
Right, he lost all his usefulness, his credibility on both sides.
Yeah, and so they had to do that. I think that's what they do a lot of time. I'm pretty sure that. I can't say for a fact that all mob bosses are killed in the mafia, or aren't killed in the mafia, but I would say that a lot of them probably fake their death, especially the higher up ones, because they were all CIA operatives.
Right. Okay. That's interesting. You don't hear that much.
Yeah, you can find that out by investigating just the general research of the general alternative media version of the Kennedy assassination. You'll find that the CIA is all tied in with the mafia, of course. So,
yeah. Well, one would think it would be in their best interest if the mafia was real to infiltrate it and keep a handle on it, keep a lid on it. But
right,
I don't know. It's all very spooky stuff, and we don't get to know, because we're not in either mob. Not in the official one, not in the underground one.
Emphasis on the spooky part.
Yeah. Very spooky.
So, yep.
Were there any interviews this week that I missed?
We did Jay Dyer on Tuesday.
Okay, I must have missed that. Okay, I didn't. Okay, that's up and ready to load and listen.
Yeah, Jay Dyer came on Tuesday, and that was a good one. He also participated in an Alex Jones episode that we did.
Oh, all this week. Okay.
Yeah, so if you tune in to go to hoaxbusterscall.com, you'll find myself playing Alex Jones, interviewing Jay Dyer, doing a multitude of different voices, which he does very well. So,
Jay Dyer does voices too?
Yeah, he does them really good. So,
oh my goodness, this will be great. How do you keep track of what you're thinking and when you switch voices? It's got to be tricky.
I don't know. It's funny when you listen to it. I swear it's all improv. We just did it off the cuff. I just basically kind of said, I want to do a Jones interview, and I want to have these guests, and it's going to be about the financial crisis. And he said, okay, and we just winged it, and it turned out great. It's really funny.
That's fantastic. Well, I don't think I could do that. I don't think I could do that. I don't think I have that skill. But that's really great that you can. Do you have to reload Alex Jones in your brain by listening to recent shows?
No, in more recent years, I don't tune into him very often. I have tuned into him a couple of times, and he's never hosting. So I turned it off because I'd rather hear him. But I think I need to update my Alex Jones impersonation, because in the recent times I've heard him, he's kind of a little bit more articulate. He's actually gotten more articulate, and it seems like he doesn't stutter as much. So I need to update my impression.
Yeah. Well, a bunch of audio chatters are trying to remind me and tell me to go listen to Alex Jones Meets David Duke. That's supposed to be some amazing show, and I keep forgetting to look it up. But they said it was a real groundbreaker when it comes to moving Alex Jones along in the research of whatever it is.
What, was that a recent thing?
Yeah, it was in the last few weeks. They I can't remember who put who in his place. I can't remember what was said about it, but I'm supposed to listen to it. And obviously, David Duke is, in my opinion, an agitator, like Alex Jones is an agitator. They're both probably on the same payroll to agitate.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. So whether they're just agitating the age-old Jewish question, Jewish problem, just to keep everyone looking the wrong way, which they seem to fool new generations on the Jewish thing all the time, because the person that pointed this out to me on the audio chat was a young guy in his 20s, he said he was. And again, he's just sure it's the Jews, the Jews, the Jews, the Jews. It's just so tiring for me to listen to, but...
Yeah. Yeah, it gets old after a while.
If it was the Jews, we would have given them their own island and sunk it by now. Why do you think people would have left this problem go on if it really was a problem? As real as the Palestinian problem.
Right. I came up with the perfect question for all the white nationalists who say that... Hitler was a good guy.
Yeah.
And it's something that it's one of the questions that you can't answer because Hitler was against the Jews, right?
Right.
So there's pretty substantial proof out there that the Jewish bankers funded Hitler.
Yes.
Okay, so... And then they did their best to keep that, information from everybody.
Yeah, from the world. Yeah, the big secret.
Right. So now what you would have to do, if Hitler was really the good guy, right, that he was, then what you would have to do is you would have to kind of say, like, okay, well, then this would be like a really big, leap that for the sake of conspiracy theorists in the future, the Jews put that, like, funded Hitler just for the fact that you could come up with a Jewish conspiracy. You see what I'm saying?
Well, it was part of a bigger conspiracy just to get all the Jews into Palestine, and Hitler was just a British puppet and all that. Yeah, it's so hard to sort the real from the fake, but you can bet that there's more to the story than we're told.
Yeah, I mean, I do agree with what you just said right there. Yeah, I agree that was one of the reasons, but I think there would be an easier way to do that probably. But
I don't know, because it's pretty, like, if you were a German who was Jewish in Germany, and you were told to give up your business and get out for a slice of sand in the middle of nowhere where it's hot and dry, that's not much of an option. I don't know how you'd get the people to leave other than to scare the hell out of them or just starve them to death.
There is some earlier stuff that you could go back and look at, too. that, you see, there never used to be Orthodox Jewry.
Yeah.
And until about the 1600s or 1700s, I can't remember. But
right.
that was all concocted to make a division within the religion itself. And
right.
And a lot of those guys who were who did that, like Moses Mendelssohn and those guys were all connected with the Bavarian Illuminati as well.
Right.
And I'm not using Illuminati in the general sense like it's used today. I'm talking specifically about the Bavarian sect that was, you know, the Adam Weishaupt sect of the Illuminati.
Yeah. And they used the word Illuminati, didn't they?
They did. Yeah.
Yeah. It wasn't the mysterious hidden power. It was out in the open. That was their name. They called themselves.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Do you listen to the No Agenda show still, or at all?
Absolutely.
The last one at the end was actually interesting towards the end when they stop trying to make comments on fake media stories like the Virginia shooting folks, and they act all crazy at the final analysis. But they were talking about a list put out by the ADL. Or the JDI, whatever it is, the Southern Poverty Law Center, whatever you think that really is.
Uh-huh.
And apparently at the top of their list of terrorists was sovereigntists, people that sign their contract without prejudice underneath their signature. And apparently they're the number one terrorist from Homeland Security this year. I guess they redo the list every year.
Yeah, they've been doing this for a long time, really. They always put people like that. I remember there was a LA Times article a couple of years ago, and it was talking about how people who consider themselves patriots, people who consider themselves sovereigntists. Were all terrorists, and they needed to be watched out. It was a big article in the LA Times, and I was pretty blown away by it. But I think a lot of that's done, especially with the Southern Poverty Law Center.
Yeah,
it's done to stoke the flames. You know, they know that people who are into that type of stuff are going to look at things that the Southern Poverty Law Center says, and then
agitating group. I would say some would say they're a papal Jesuit controlled group. They're just there to agitate and reflect on real things that may or may not be happening in the homeland, if you'd like to use that awful Nazi type word. And one would think, I just love how they recompile the list every year. You would think that sovereigntists or militiamen would have been at the top of the list the year after the whole Oklahoma bombing Timothy McVeigh psyop, which I'm convinced was a 9/11 style psyop, no doubt about it.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, we were on that call with Jay. We did talk about fakery. Or at least Jay and Chris did talked about a lot of fakery once you get into the episode, so I think you'll enjoy it.
Oh, I will. I don't know. It wasn't downloading right, I think, during the week, so it fell off my radar. There's so much going on these days, it's hard to remember everything I'm supposed to look out for. I have to make a calendar. Now there's so many broadcasts on the things I'm interested in. I have to remind myself to look the next day and make sure the audio came down on my little podcatcher there. I'm still following a lot of the NASA bashers. I said on my audio chat that NASA's got to be the biggest, easiest, dumbest target out there now to illustrate fakery. And I'm pretty interested in that, whether it has anything to do with the nature of the shape of the Earth, I'm not too worried, but they have a live stream of the ISS, the International Space Station, and I think that's a real mistake on their behalf, because it's pretty easy to pick apart the problems based on their own information they give of what's up there.
Yeah. Yeah, I was bummed to hear that Kayham's not going to do her program anymore.
Well, she says that the school year starts out this week, and she's busy. I get it. I'm pretty busy. I haven't done a regular broadcast either. I just don't have the energy, but I'm putting all mine into the audio chat. For me, it's just more fun mixing it up, and I can't commit to a guest. Like, you guys are pretty good at committing to a guest and getting there and giving an hour of your time, making sure you attend to it. So I can't even do that. But maybe Kay will be at the audio chat, or maybe she'll start up again. Who knows? Because of the pay, which is zero, it's difficult to motivate oneself sometimes. And if life gets in the way, you got to tend to that first. Or maybe it's just she doesn't like all my baller skepticism and needs to go out on her own because she's tired of butting heads with all my posting on that. Who knows? I can't tell you the actual reason other than what she told us.
Yeah, I know how life gets in the way. That's why you'll always hear me cut out an hour and 15 minutes into an afternoon commute because I got to...
Yeah, you're very reliable that way. When you pull into that driveway, you roll up the audio fakeologist drive home commute and park it.
Yep, that's the more important stuff. So,
well, you're good that way. That's very good. I sometimes go overboard, but I actually invited Chris Kendall on an audio chat for today. Whether or not he checked his email in time, I don't know. But
are you invited Chris on? Oh, that's cool. Yeah. Yeah, I don't know if he's around today, but maybe.
I don't either. But maybe I'll get him to maybe just bring up some of the stuff that you guys are talking about this week. Anything else on your plate for the next week or so? You got some more guests coming up or more things tweaking your interest?
Oh yeah, we got another guest this Tuesday. I'll keep his identity concealed.
Ooh, what field?
What's that?
What field is he in? Can you give us a clue?
No, we've interviewed him before. But
all right.
But it'll be on a different subject than what we interviewed him on last time. But he's one of my favorite guests. That's for sure. He is a.
Yeah. Well, Jay Dyer is one of your favorite guests too, right?
Yeah, he's a good conversationalist, and he can pretty much speak on all things. So he's definitely good, and he's one of those guys that you can get on a monthly basis to talk about anything pretty much. So.
Yeah, he's very knowledgeable and very smart. Would you call him a philosopher? Is he a classically trained philosopher?
He went to school. He went to university for philosophy. So yeah, he knows all the ins and outs of philosophy. But he quit grad school halfway through it because he just figured out it was all BS. So.
So yeah, he quit philosophy. Wow.
Yeah, he says it on the most recent call, and he said it on the call last time. He talks about how, like, when you take philosophy and you're studying Plato, they talk about how, you know, your subjects are, was Plato a misogynist, or how does Marx relate to Plato? You know, like, they don't teach you fundamentalism. They incorporate women's studies and cultural Marxism into philosophy, and he says that they do it in every subject.
Hi, this is Derillium, and you're listening to Fakeologist Radio on fakeologist.com.